We'd like to open it up to questions and answers right now, or questions and kind of comments. Anything from the audience?
To the actor that played Etta, I'd like to know if knowing all these bits of information about the role will ruin your performance. I'm saying that because I felt that you played it, you know, with just the right edge today, as well as your counterpart. You know, there was just that hesitancy on his part, and your, you know, the way you brought that out. It's. I always wonder if too much knowledge is a bad thing about these things. So.
Well, first of all, thank you. Wow, and I'm not saying this in any kind of negative way, but to counter what you had just said, there's never enough knowledge that you can get. That was great. but every single time that I do a reading of this, there's something different. There's something different that I find and that I take in. And especially after this presentation, which was amazing, by the way. Thank you. Like, I feel very honored to have experienced this and gotten this kind of education this morning. Sorry, this afternoon. Yeah, it's something else that I'm going to bring to the table if I ever read for Etta again in the future. There's definitely all these things that come to mind, and there's a different spirit that I can bring to Etta. And just dealing with a lot of present day things going on right now, there's things that I can mesh into that performance, and it's never ending. The civil rights, it's a never ending struggle right now, you know? And until it is, which I hope one day it will be, but until it is, we're gonna need appropriate literature like this to expand what it is that we all struggle for in humanity. Unfortunately, right now, in the present, certain backgrounds like this have to be pushed forward because we haven't progressed past it yet. So, of course, knowledge like this is so important to have, because even if I do not say specific words that capture every single thing that went on in the movement, it will come through on stage for sure. There's no way that a person in an audience cannot think of multiple things upon multiple things in symbols. For whatever they're personally going through, and for whatever is going on in our world, in our universe, like, which is why it's so wonderfully written. It can be seen in multiple ways. But to answer your question, no, this will not ruin my future performance. It will hopefully make it even better, so. Thank you for that question.
Now, I'm curious, Ms. Seaton, obviously you're the playwright, and I've seen the play, but I'm just curious, what's your reaction to their analysis of your play? I'm just kind of curious, how does that affect you, and what's your kind of reaction to the commentary?
Wow, it's really, well, it's, thank you, Dr. June, it's Dr. Lee June. So fascinating to hear, and it's you know, the first first thing you think is, oh my goodness, is this about me, or is this about something I've written? Because these were absolutely wonderful presentations, and I really, really enjoyed them. And and it's kind of interesting that you start to do the research in writing a play, and then when you write the play, you have to put the research aside because there's so much baggage to it. And you go into that world, and you walk in that world, and it's not about you, it's about the characters, and you let the characters come to life. I let the characters come to life, okay? And I hear them saying things that maybe I wouldn't say, or I would say in ways that I might or might not say them. Because, you know, I can't control everything about them once they're on the page. I mean, I just can't control everything about the characters. Because in plays, you have to create conflict, and you make it dramatic. And maybe I personally might want the character to do something that was very safe. You know, you want to hover over them. Well, you can't hover over them. You have to let them go. And you have to let them make mistakes or not make mistakes or whatever. So, you know, you have these characters and they're operating. And they've forgotten about some of the things that come up in these papers. And then it's like, well, maybe they're not there anymore, because I've let them go. And then, like a miracle, they come back, and I hear them. I hear them in the papers. It's like they were there with me when I was doing the research, and they bring that research back because they're such fine scholars, and I guess there was something there in the first place. Miracle of miracles. I guess that's the miracle of the whole thing. So if that answers your question, Dr. June. And that first question was from, and I believe this is being recorded, was from Dr. Alexandra Summit of the Portwood Institute. She asked the first question. There. Yes.
First of all, everybody involved did a great job. I really enjoyed it, and I'd like to see the play in its entirety at some point. But I was wondering, in terms of the computer stuff that you were doing, what exactly is that program? You said is involved with matching up images and videos with, like, teachers, you know, anything they want to upload. Like, what exactly is entailed by that?
Thank you for your question. The platform is designed to support engagement and learning. It's being used by the MSU Alumni Association to engage with alumni around things that they really care about, and also as a way to give the faculty and others a chance to complement, you know, build collections to complement their teaching and presentations. The platform is based on the research that I did for my dissertation, so it's evolved since then. It's a supportive learning environment based on educational psychology, constructivist principles. So the idea is that you can build these interconnected, supportive environments that can enable the learners to move around in nonlinear fashion and encounter events and in cases and in different contexts and be able to examine them from different perspectives. So that's why, you know, I was so excited to, like, Ken Prouty was, his paper was the first one I heard last year. And it just seemed, to me, it just jumped off the page, and you know, I saw it in a visual, very, you know, visual way. So we started working with him early on, but it's just the chance to kind of extend the learning, the engagement. You know, it might be before the presentations or the classroom instruction or the play, because I know when I first read one of your plays, I was not as informed as I should have been about architecture, so I had some, you know, points during the reading where I needed some help. So this is, you know, one way that it might be used. If you don't know anything about John Cage, which is probably like 98% of the U.S. population, you need to jump out and maybe spend a little time in the learning environment. I was excited. I'm always excited to work with Sandra, and I'm excited to work with historians because, I mean, they have the habits of mind that we're looking to foster in this type of environment, to be comfortable with ambiguity, to, you know, realize that concepts like minimalism and is very ill-structured, and you can't just look at one example and say, I get it. You need to look at a lot of different examples, and they need to be from the real world, and you need to be put in context and examined from different perspectives. That was something that I did for my dissertation. I looked at the concept of freedom. And so, you know, freedom, one sentence definition of freedom doesn't help much. You can memorize it, but it's not going to help you apply it in the real world. You need to look at a lot of different examples and see how it's connected to other concepts. For this, it was kind of a perfect way for a lot of different things to come together.
This is the last one. I'm curious. Dr. Dagvobian, I'm kind of curious. As a historian, you know, some historians really look at films and plays, and they're very critical of them and the role they play in terms of how they educate or miseducate the public. I'm just kind of curious. Not only this one, but kind of your general take on kind of how historians would advise people to consume plays and others, what the benefits, the negative, that interplay.
Thanks for your question. I don't really need the microphone. Thank you for your question,
Thanks for the question, Dr. June. I would say, maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, that 99% of the Hollywood films that come out are historically inaccurate, meaning that they don't exactly take into account what happened. Sometimes the directors will work with historians, but there's too much historical imagination involved in Hollywood films because they have to have a good ending. In the African-American historical trajectory, that happens to be the case 9 times out of 10 unless Spike Lee is behind the camera. In the 2 most recent films that deal with black people, there was a whole lot of misinformation. One of them involving the so-called Great Emancipator, and the other one involving slave rebellion in Django by Quentin Tarantino. And we don't need to talk about that too deeply. But plays sometimes can be different, and there is this historical tradition with dramatists and playwrights where they actually do interpret the past based upon a careful analysis of the past and historians' work, and also upon their own personal research. I was struck again by August Wilson's plays. He's supposedly written these cycle plays that have taken us from the early 20th century through the late 20th century that are historically grounded and are historically accurate. And with playwrights who I believe are more scholarly most of the time than filmmakers, unless they're doing documentaries, we can get more, I believe, just like with novels. There's a list of novels that I use. And just to give one example of a novel that's my favorite to use for teaching history is Charles Johnson's prize-winning 1990 book called The Middle Passage. And it's all about the Middle Passage, the slave trade. And why it's so great is that he enjoys the liberty of having a historical imagination. I'll acknowledge that historians don't know anything but try and know everything. We really don't know what happened, but we're trying our best to reconstruct the past. And the so-called historical facts that really aren't facts anyway, because they're just facts because people made them facts, help us get there. But you also need a little imagination. And Sandra Seton's plays, and as a playwright, she's able to bring that imagination with more liberty than someone like me as a historian who can write a narrative but is bound by the so-called facts. So when I was reading the play, it wasn't that I was trying to double check and fact check to see if things were quote unquote accurate for the time, but I was more thinking about the possibilities of what it could have entailed. And she raised so many issues of what could have that was based upon personal experience in the historical record that allows you to think about the past with an imagination, which is what you actually have to do as a historian instead of reading these boring textbooks. So I do like watching films. I do like reading plays. I do like reading novels to learn about history because it can allow you to think of the what-ifs that we as scientific historians sometimes are too conservative to acknowledge. So that's my basic response to that inquiry. And I didn't teach my big class when Dr. Seton had this play done, but in the future I'm definitely going to offer it as an interpretation to that standard approach that I give the students.
How about David? Is that?
I wanted to mention that I really loved when Madra said, "And that's music history." Really tied it together so nicely. I wanted to ask. I was going to also ask a question about the background, because I loved with Tama's presentation how you had the ebony and the different things that you chose. It, you know, as a highly sensitive person, sometimes you don't want all eyes on you. You know, you really want to have other things people can look at when you're delivering a paper. You know? It really helped. I wondered if that was available. I suppose could read your dissertation. I could. And
you'd be the fourth person or fifth person.
Right, right. It'd be a historical miracle, right? But is that available, that technology, or are you just like Googling in something? And
So it's available to MSU faculty, staff, students. MSU AA is making it available, so I can give you my contact information, anybody who's interested in the room, and I'm happy to meet with you. And you know, part of the package is we give you access to the platform and provide some support in putting content together. But MSUA also provides the marketing support. So if you're, you know, interested in promoting a book you have or an event that's coming up or anything, we help push that out to the alumni. And so we've got a pretty big group. So
I was just curious about why, in fact, you chose the certain locations that you did, Greenwood, Mississippi, and Champaign-Urbana, and also what type of research and how in-depth you had to go in order to write the play.
Wow. You know, I've forgotten... You know, I forget, you know, like grandmothers say, I've forgotten more than, what's the expression? I've forgotten more than you'll ever know, or something like that. I've forgotten more than I've forgotten. Well, you know, I was a student at the University of Illinois. I was never a music history major. And so I knew, I could imagine Champaign, Urbana. I could imagine it. You know, Greenwood, Mississippi looms large. And I'm trying to remember now. I knew this history very well. And I'll ask Dr. Dagbovi, was that where Medgar Evers was? Where was he?
I believe it's Jackson.
Jackson. Greenwood was one of, that's right. Greenwood was one of the early locations for SNCC. And I was just tracing Yeah, I read about quite a few books about the early history of SNCC. And I was interested in the time before Freedom Summer. And so I just read generally. You know, I was reading newspaper articles, old Ebony magazines, history books. And it was important to me to place it in 1963. And I reread the whole story of Medgar Evers and his time with us. And I listened to a documentary by his wife, and just lots of things. But once I start writing a play, I don't tend to think about those facts because I feel very sure of where I've placed myself. And then it's time for me to lose that familiarity because I can't know more than the characters. Is that weird? You're in that world, right? I don't know everything people know now. And I wanted to put it in 1963 because I knew that summer Medgar Evers was murdered. And that was the first big date for me. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
Sort of. And I kind of just wanted to hear from anybody up here any thoughts, anyone that hadn't said anything so far up here in the front, and just to say, briefly myself to say that I love the performance. Terry, Mardra, Ken had to leave. He had an out-of-town emergency. David did such a wonderful job directing the piece. Brian, thank you for your innovative work. My dear friend, Tama Hamilton Ray, Doctors Tama Hamilton Ray and Dr. Pero Dagbovi, Dr. Ken Prudy, had to leave, but fabulous papers. Just want to say that. It's, what a wonderful job you all did. And perhaps just a few words from, we haven't heard from, I don't believe we've heard from David or Mardra or Tama. So.
Sure. One of the things that I got really excited about in this conversation is I think the idea of leaving a conversation open. So Dr. Dagbovi in his presentation alluded to the fact that it's not exactly clear what Etta does after the conclusion of the play. And in talking about history, we also talked about how plays as a reflection of history, I think, they both kind of shed light on a historical period, but they also allow for more research and more dialogue about a historical period. So I think that that's one of the great things really about this reading and about this conversation is that there's an acknowledgement that the conversation isn't done. That we are left to imagine other possible futures for Etta. We're left to think about the historical period in critical ways and to bring that historical period into the present in critical ways that shed light on our present condition. And so I think one of the great things about this kind of programming and about this event in particular is that we've all of a sudden had this conversation, and I know that I'm excited to learn more and keep this conversation going into the future. That's one of the things that I think is so powerful about using theater, is the power to leave those conversations open and get the audience heading out the doors excited to learn more and excited to talk about these topics. So that's something that I've found really valuable about this experience, and I just wanted to share that. So thank you all.
That was David Clausen, our director. And Mardra Thomas?
I love the title of this work, Music History. I love history, and I love music. There's something about your work and the way you've put this together and gifted us that we can step in and touch these people. And that's something that I always look at in history. You know, we you learn history as a child in school, but I've always yearned to actually touch the characters. And you allow us to do that. And the fact that you put the music with it really comforts me, because I've talked to, in particular my husband, who's a musician, about how music will, you can take a slice of your life and you can hear a particular song or a particular tune, and it'll take you right back to that particular place and time. And so you've taken this history of what was going on during that time and the different composers, and it excites me. It really touches me. And so I adore that. So with my background in music and in theater, it's just a perfect fit. And it was so exciting just standing there reading the stage directions, because it's like I can, as a narrator, just peer over into that world in that time in 1963. And I just think that's a great and wonderful thing. And you did a lovely job. It was just nice to be able to just to peek into that world and remember and to go back. And for those who are too young to go back, or not old enough to go back to 1963, gosh, you've just cleared the fog and say, oh, that's what it was like. So that's what we need. We need to, so many times people, you know, they'll see, young people will see images, but they don't realize that these were real people that were going through real struggles and had real triumphs and had real loves and so forth. So that's what I really, is some of the things that I really adore about the work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for bringing that perspective. And this is Dr. Tama Hamilton Ray.
I just want to say from,
is it on? It's on.
Okay. From an educator's point of view and thinking about the play, I bought a set of music history to use in my class. So I teach first year writing and some other things, and so actually I'm going to use it this semester because I'm teaching a class called Presence of the Past. And to have my students actually read it aloud in class and to think about some of the things. And so I just want to particularly talk about how Sandra places all these different markers in the play with no explanation necessarily of what this means, or, you know, it leads you to go and do the research. And that's what I find exciting about it as an educator, that you understand the play, you understand the characters, but you're also left with a lot of curiosity about the world that they live in. So sometimes you can write something, you can completely block someone out of the world, and then it's totally uninteresting. Sometimes you can give too much information. We read one of Buchi Amecheta's books, a Nigerian writer, and it's a very, very good book, but one of the criticisms made about her writing was that she's writing for a Western audience and does a lot of explanation in her writing, as if it's, you know, anthropological book, as opposed, you know, just a narrative. So I think that what Sandra does is, it's not, it's about you just coming to this, hearing, seeing, or reading the play, understanding the world they're in, but then being curious for more because of the things that she brings up, the world she creates. It's just a really well done piece. And I get something new out of it every time I see it, every time I read it. So that's, you know, a really great thing. So,
thank you so much. Did you have a question?
No. I think that's a good close to me.
That is wonderful.